This is KJ and Lyons. KJ Carson and John Lyons right now on WEEI.
KJ and Lyons rolls on here on WEEI, 617-779-7937, text line 37937. John, I mean, look. Okay, so Nashville would have to eventually win a game, right? They were going to eventually win a game. But doesn't it feel a little bit of a kind of a way that not only did they win their first game against the Bruins, but it's a shutout, and then outshoot them by 9 shots in a shutout?
Yeah, and it just felt like they were the team, and we were also watching the Celtics in part, so I didn't see the whole game, but it felt like they were the team a little bit more ready to go. And as far as the Bruins themselves, it feels a little bit like, you know, they bring in Elias Lindholm, they bring in Zadorov, they have Mason Lowry now being a big part of the team, they re-sign Swayman. They have the talent there to be a really good team, but it feels like it's really been slow for everything to kind of start fitting together. I mean, there's 7 games in, and it feels like things are not quite fitting together as well as I think, at least I thought they would have at this point.
So maybe a bit of the Swayman situation was a bit of a distraction, maybe. I think there's probably a period of adjustments for Swayman back there as well, though giving up 4 last night still means... Boy, you gotta work out the quads a little more, huh?
Last one was an empty netter, so technically.
So he gives up 3, right? So, but the other part of it is the Bruins are being outshot 73-53 in the third period this season. So, like, why such a difference? What is, like, where's the disconnect?
Yeah, and this is something I felt like last year under Montgomery, they always had bad like second periods, and now it's been kind of the third period that they've struggled at times. And you look at so far, like they've lost to Florida twice. They lose to Utah. Like those are, you know, those are 2 good teams. Nashville's a team that's not good. You're following a loss in Utah. Like that's when you're hoping to bounce back and get a win. And I would even argue that Florida game they lost on Columbus Day, I mean, there's no... Kachuk in that game, right? So they're without their best player. They're without their second best player too. You still lose that game 4-3. So again, like they're 3-3-1. They're not awful, but right. For the talent they have, it's not coming together. Like I said, at least as quickly as maybe I thought it would.
So maybe there's a bookend situation going on because they're all 3 of their losses. If they've been losing at the end of one period, they're losing the game. So they're not coming back. And then in the last period, they're just not getting the shots off. I think it's too early to say, you know, how is Jim Montgomery have the balance of the locker room? I know that's kind of like one of the buzz discussions that are kind of starting, like if this team doesn't perform, is Montgomery on the chopping block? I don't think this necessarily helps the conversation getting to a slow start. This is one of those situations where you would hope to get to a fast start, get away from the distraction of Swayman not being there and then coming back. And then after coming back, I mean, you're still kind of been so-so at best. So does it feel like as long as Sweeney and Cam Neely are in that situation, the players know that the coach may be expendable?
Well, and it's an interesting discussion because 2 years ago, I thought Montgomery had a really bad playoff series against the Panthers and was one of the reasons they lost that epic first-round choke job.
Right.
But then last year, I actually thought, I mean, they kind of overachieved. They got to the second round, 6 games against Florida where their roster wasn't quite as good. So it's been kind of, playoff-wise, like a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde thing. And in the regular season, he's been good both years. And now they have a tough start. I don't think it's at the point where they're going to want to make a change. But I think if this trend continues, like if they're 12-12, you know, just ballpark, you know, let's say they're 14-12 or something through 26 games roughly, you know, or something like, you know, 14, right. 11-2, whatever you want to call it. And they're hovering around 500. Then I think maybe they look around and say, this isn't the guy, you know, for, because this is also, let's not forget.
I think he makes it through the entire season.
I really do too. But I also, let's remember, this is a lot or a much different group than what he was hired to coach. I mean, when he was hired a couple of years ago, you had Bergeron, Krejci came back. Right. It was kind of their last run.
It was like the last ride, yeah.
You were fully loaded. Now, some of those guys are still here, like Pastrnak, Marchand, right? Coyle are still here, McAvoy. But then it's Lowry's new, Lindholm's new, Zadorov's new, Beecher is essentially new, Kastelic's new. So right. a lot of new faces or guys that really weren't big parts of that team he was hired to coach. So I think we need to monitor. He got great regular season results out of that previous group. is he going to get those same great or similar great regular season results out of a group that is a significantly different than the one he was hired to coach?
But doesn't it feel like there's a little bit of an in-between, like there's going to be a room for error because you're trying to get these new guys to acclimate themselves to the ones that are here? And then I think at the same time, there is an expectation. I don't like using the word expectation, but there's an expectation to be better than you were last year for sure. And maybe the expectation from upper management is, okay, we've given this team the tools that you've screened that is pretty much needed on that front line, center specifically. Do you wonder if, I don't know, it's almost like if they get to the same point in the playoffs this year, I think that might be okay for Jim Montgomery's job, but I don't know how that would be for the fan base in terms of, like, it feels like the car is stuck in neutral.
Yeah, and I think you got to look at some of these guys, too. Like, Charlie Coyle has 1 point in 7 games. I mean, this is one of your highest-paid players, a guy that has kind of jumped back and forth between second-line and third-line center. I personally want him as a third-line center, but
he's get there pretty soon.
He's one of your highest-paid guys, and I know plus-minus isn't everything, but he's a -6. I mean, that kind of stands out. Then Pavel Zacha, who I think has been largely very good for the Bruins, but only 2 points in 7 games. Matt Patra, only 1 point in 7 games. Like, these are guys, like, look, hey, I've been really enjoying Mark Kastelic, and he's got 5 points in 7 games. He had a couple goals against, I think, Montreal was a couple weeks ago. But, I mean, that shouldn't be the guy that's tied for second on your team in
your
points.
Your fourth line can't be your best
right,
line.
Right, exactly. And I think, in multiple games it has been. And yeah. I think that's the thing. You look at some of the, like, Zacha, Coyle, Patra, even Frederick, 1 point in 7 games. Like, these are guys, I think, collectively, you need a lot more production out of them. I mean, Cole Koepke leads your team in points with 6. And then Lindholm and Pastrnak are there with 5. But then Kastelic at 5, Beecher at 5. Like, those aren't the guys. Koepke, Kastelic, and Beecher should not be the guys who are, you know, top two on your points in team. I mean, it's a bonus if they're giving you points, but if they're your top two guys and you have other guys like Coyle with 1, that to me is a long-term problem if it continues.
So you remember Patro went last year and played with the Canadian junior team and people were like, what's going on? Do you think that might be like an underlying story involving Charlie Coyle? Like, you know, you see what I'm saying? Like, are they trying to develop him to get him off of that third line into the second line? And will Coyle accept being the third line guy?
I think they would be at their best if Lindholm is their first line center, if Patra grows into a good second line center, like especially facilitating offensively, and then you have Coyle as your third line center. Like, let's not forget, the two best Bruins teams of the last 8 years, 2019 and 2023, Coyle was the third line center on both of those teams. Now, granted, they had Bergeron and Krejci, but he was the third line center, and a lot of other teams couldn't match up with him. But we saw in 2021, 2022, when he got bumped up to that second line, it just didn't quite look
right. Not tall enough for the
exactly.
ride.
Exactly.
Yes.
He was great for the third line, not quite the guy for the second line. So, again, I think their goal come playoff time, or their ideal scenario is, yeah, Lindholm's your first line center, but Patra is your guy as the second line center. And it's tough because, what's he, 20? I mean, that's a lot to put on a 20-year-old. Right. But I think offensive skill-wise, I think there's a higher ceiling there than Coyle.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I do wonder, because you remember when DeBrusk was making all of his noise of what he should be and what he should do. I want to be here, don't want to be here, and so forth. I think the last thing you'd want to potentially have is Coyle now being clearly relegated to that third line center and start feeling some kind of way. And this is just a team that just has no room for distractions, considering it started with its biggest distraction to start the season.
Yeah, and I don't know how you feel about this or how Zach feels, but I feel like and I think the Bruins, again, can be a top 4 or 5 team in the NHL. I really do, despite their early season struggles. But I think on a cup-winning team, Elias Lindholm is probably a second line center. You know, and so they don't really even have that first line. And maybe that's some sort of major in-season trade. Maybe it's something that happens after this year. But I think on a truly elite team, like if you're going to beat Florida or beat Edmonton and win a cup, maybe Lindholm is your second line center. Patra's on a wing and Coyle's a third line center. But they just don't have that guy to slot above Lindholm. And I mean, unless you guys can think of someone, I don't
Zach,
know.
Zach, get in here because his love for Charlie Coyle is greater than anybody I know.
You know, so I
grew agree. Up one town over from
he's
Zach.
From Weymouth. He's really
Did you know he's from Weymouth?
But I do agree with you, John, that Lindholm, ideally is probably a second line center on a cup winning team, but that's the issue when you don't develop high end talent. Like, well,
the last time they developed a good center was literally David Krejci.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
19 years ago. Right.
So obviously that's the position they were in. They had a massive hole at their first line center, so they went out and they paid the best center on the free agency market.
Right.
So like, I do agree that they probably, like, in an ideal world, have a better first-line center. But one of the behind-the-bee videos that came out during the preseason was Don Sweeney saying that adding a second-line right wing was going to be a priority for the team at the deadline. So I think that's probably where the upgrade comes from. Personally, I'd like to see Fabian Lysell get a chance there before they go out and make a trade. Still a lot of time.
Yeah, I felt like
deadline,
he got cut from camp kind of early. Like, they sent him down, and I'm like, Lysell's supposed to be this. Like, it was him and Lowry, right? Those are your two can't-miss prospects. And I think Lowry, he popped a little bit in the playoffs. I think he's been okay so far this year. I mean, he's got 4 points already, but
maybe a confidence thing?
The Lysell thing's weird to me. Like, I thought he would be a part of, and again, maybe not a second-line guy yet, but I mean, Brad Marchand, your captain now. Like, his first few months in the Bruins, he was a fourth line wing, and he kind of grew into the role. Eventually, got to the second line with Bergeron on that cup run. Then they became the first line. But yeah, I thought Lysell got cut really early from camp, and he's a guy I would want to see as part of this team, at least get a look. Yeah, before the deadline.
And like, to me, like, Lysell, if he comes up and it doesn't click immediately, like, I don't think anybody's looking for him to come up and light the world on fire. But they played Max Jones on the second line last night.
Yeah, I'd rather have Lysell.
He's played two games, taken, I think, 5 penalties. Like, that's just not going to hack it for a second line wing or even like any player that's regularly slotting into your lineups. Like, personally, I'd want to see Poitras at the second line center, Lysell on that wing, because even if it doesn't like immediately, like I said, they don't immediately come in, light the world on fire, they at least, you know, they have the potential and the high end talent to give you the point production that you need out of your second line.
KJ and Lions and Zach, thank you so much for chiming in. Because it's funny when you say Charlie Coyle, you can feel like that what's that meme with the Arthur hand just starts going. Am I right, Zach?
Yeah, I do like Charlie Coyle, but I agree that he's a third line.
No, but I think on a cup winning team, it's Lindholm second line, Coyle third line, and then you're pretty damn good.
Charlie would be one of the best third line centers in the league.
But think about this, and Zach's absolutely right. You get the best that you can pay for because you're not a cup level team just yet.
Yep.
This team still needs to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, at least in the next twice in the next 3 years. Before that probably happens in terms of some type of deal, I think really just this year, it's like, man, just get out of that hump of getting stuck in the quarters or in the semis. You've got to be able to say, all right, at least in this 7-game series, anything could happen, and you could be playing for a cup. 617-779-7937, text line 37937, KJ and Lions. We talk about what's going on in the World Series, plus Patriots talk. That's still to come. But right now, it's time to trend with Zach Coe.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Celtics raised Banner 18 to the rafters and kicked off the pursuit of Banner 19 with a statement 132-109 win over the New York Knicks. Jason Tatum led the way for the Celtics with 37 points, 10 rebounds. Jaylen Brown and Derek White were right behind him with 23 and 24 points, respectively. They have the night off before heading down to the nation's capital to take on the Wizards tomorrow night. Tip-off set for 7 p.m. Bruins fell to the Predators 4-0 the final in Nashville last night, wrapping up a 3-game road trip that saw the Bees go 1-1-1. They also have the night off before returning home to take on the Dallas Stars. Puck drop set for 7 p.m. tomorrow night. In NFL news, the defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs acquired wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins from the Tennessee Titans in exchange for a conditional 4th-round pick that could become a 3rd. Also in MLB news, Netflix released their 2004 Red Sox documentary, The Comeback, today to mark the 20th anniversary of Game 1 of that 04 World Series. And sadly, Dodgers legend Fernando Valenzuela has passed away. He was just 63 years old. My name is Zach Coe, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More KJ and Lions coming up after this.
We're back to KJ and Lions on WEEI.
KJ and Lions on WEEI, 617-779-7937, text line 37937. You know, John, Drake May sounds like he is the extension of the head coach talking there when he was on Arcane and Hart earlier this week.
Yeah, the messaging felt like they were in at least pretty good sync, I would say.
Well, and I think that's so key because nobody in the fan base is saying, oh my gosh, this Drake May thing is a disaster. Nobody's saying that.
I think that's the best thing they've done this year. He seems to have developed, you know, and come along pretty well.
Well, that's the other thing. If it's coaching for other guys, but it's not for him, then it's the coach. You see what I'm saying? Like, if you're saying that, hey, because players aren't performing and so forth, I'm looking at those guys like that's a motivational thing, right? If you're not motivated to do your job effectively, because we've seen them do their job. Talk about the defense, right? Remember the defense puts on that stand, they stop Jacksonville on that 4th-and-2 and get the ball back. It was like, okay, well, clearly you were able to get a stand there, so you have it in you. But with Drake May, we've been seeing a continual consistency of getting better. And I think that's because Mayo, just the same way that I think he believed in Alex Van Pelt and what he was telling him in terms of like where May's readiness is, I think he's like, okay, I believe in you. You are the guy for this team. In fact, you're not too young to be the leader of this team, and I think we're starting to see that now.
Yeah, and I think when it comes to the development of May, right, Ben McAdoo has had a hand, T.C. McCartney's had a hand, Alex Van Pelt's had a hand, so I wonder who in that building has done the most work with him development-wise, because whoever it is has done a good job. Like, we've had a lot of criticisms of the coaching staff, and I think there are fair criticisms of the coaching staff, and they deserve some of it, but whoever's worked with him on development, I mean, May got better from the time he was drafted to training camp, through training camp, and from the last time we saw him in the preseason and training camp to now, he's also gotten better since then. So whether it's McAdoo, whether it's McCartney, whether it's Van Pelt, whether it's a mix of those three, whoever's done the development of him, that is one thing the coaching staff, I will say, has done a good job of.
So no Mayo is part? Mayo
well,
is
Mayo
not part of that mix?
Well, Mayo came out and said that Van Pelt's the head coach of the offense and they're the ones doing it. So, like, I guess Mayo gets some tertiary credit, but by his own words, it's not really him. So, I guess, like, that's why I look, and I think those are the guys, probably more so T.C. McCartney as the quarterback's coach,
right,
working
okay, that's
directly
the most intimate,
with May
right.
every single day.
But in terms of the poise and the belief of what you're doing and what, and even echoing that some of the guys on the, what did you say? Some of the guys on this team probably have to make a shift about what they are doing. So that is that's an overall statement. That's not just an offensive statement. That's a statement about the team. That's why I think that core
statement for a rookie too.
But that's why I say, I believe that Mayo is kind of like, look, you're young and you're ready. And when I say that, I mean that, hey, if you have to say something bold, I've got your back. Because nobody picked that. Right, that's a very bold statement for a rookie. And I think in any other situation, if it was enough, like let's say Jacoby Brissett made that statement when he was up there. You don't think there would be follow-up questions about his own play and some of the things that are going on? Do you include yourself as being one of those, you're the leader of this? Yeah. So, by nobody questioning that, this is a brilliant kind of like Sun Tzu Art of War thing. It's almost kind of like Drake May is Mayo's spy of positivity, right? Because nobody's saying anything negative about May, but yet Mayo is his head coach. And what falls on the head coach? Everything, right?
And I think May, by the nature of being the starting quarterback and the third overall pick, you're a leader, right? Whether you like it or not, like because of your draft status, because you're going to be here potentially long term, and just the nature of the starting quarterback position, whether you're a good starting quarterback or you're a bad starting quarterback, you are going to be a leader as long as you are a starting quarterback, whether you like it or not. So I think for him, it feels like he's kind of taken the idea of, oh, well, I'm going to grab the bull by the horns and I'm going to go attack this. Whereas the previous couple guys, whether it was Jones or Zappe, it felt like they were more, I'm going to let this come to me. I'm going to be part of this. Whereas May feels like I'm going to be out in front of this. And again, he's a rookie. It's only been 2 games, so there's only so much cachet built up there. But it feels like he has a much stronger desire to go and lead from the front. And I think once he kind of continues to play better, but also once he starts to win here and there, and I know they're not going to win a lot of games this year, but when he starts to actually put wins together, then he's going to really build up that voice even stronger and stronger. But I like the fact that he's starting out with it basically right away.
Yeah, it's fascinating how it all developed, because I think as the story goes along, I think it will be a successful one. I know there are some people that want to peel Mayo away from May and say, let's stick with the good story of May and get another coach in here. I think you're kind of defeating the purpose if you're saying, look, if you're going to build something together, the worst thing that can happen is what we saw happen go on last year, is that the head coach and the quarterback are in two different places. You know, you're screaming at a guy on national television. Like, if your head coach and your quarterback can't be on the same page, you're just waiting for failure to come your way. Like, can you think of a coach and their quarterback where they just didn't see eye to eye, but yet they were completely successful?
Not really.
Like, because even with Bill and Tom, that was a thing that came so much later. You
know, that was more like Bill the GM and Brady.
Right, it was business.
When they actually got down to getting ready for games, that wasn't as
big. They were the same, right.
Yeah, and it's an interesting point, too. And I think, like, this is another thing. We talked earlier in the show, and if you missed any of it, Odyssey app, Apple Podcasts, go find it. We talked earlier about the Patriots have started over the last year or so to do things that bad organizations do and how frustrating that has been. You know what else bad organizations do, KJ?
Lose?
They get a new offensive coordinator every year.
Yeah.
And think about what the Patriots have done. 2021, they had Josh McDaniels. 22, Patricia and Judge. 23, O'Brien. 24, Van Pelt. And I have some criticisms of Van Pelt, but if he is developing Drake May, do you really want to have another offensive coordinator, which would be May 2nd in 2 years? Like, that's, and I'm not saying, you know, the jury's still out, right? There's 17 games. We got to wait and see. But it's just, that's something to also be cautious of, because that's another thing bad organizations do. And when you look at the Patriots, when they were good, what happened? They had Charlie Weiss, who then handed it off to Josh McDaniels, who ran a very similar system, who then handed it off to Bill O'Brien, who then handed it back to Josh McDaniels. So you had a lot of continuity on that offensive coaching staff, and you were able to develop a lot of players and do a lot of different things. Last few years, I mean, you're getting coached by McDaniels, who's an elite offensive coordinator. Then you go to Patricia and Judge, who have no idea what they're doing in the position and were bad. Then you go to Bill O'Brien, who's good, but his assistants aren't really up to par. Now you're with Van Pelt, who there are questions of, but it's like whiplash for some of these guys that, I mean, Hunter Henry's been here 4 years. He's had four offensive coordinators.
That's true.
You know, like, you don't want Drake May to get into that situation that Mac Jones got into, where 3 years, three different offensive coordinators, back and forth to different systems. Again, we can criticize Van Pelt, and I think there are things to criticize, but I think that's just one thing to keep in the back of your mind, because that's another one of those things that bad organizations do.
KJ Lyons on WEEI, 15 minutes away from the Lions Den, plus we'll talk World Series. Also, we've got to talk about the Celtics, 61 three-point shots last night, but that's still a great showing. That's still to come. We're talking Patriots, and I noticed something very interesting on the Patriots injury list, just other than saying the name. Of course, we mentioned during trending, Zach mentioned the different players that did not participate. Ramondre Stevenson is listed as foot/non-injury-related-personal. Do you think Detective KJ may be onto something from here over the last couple of weeks? Because it's football, it's a foot, not injury-related, personal.
Yeah, I think you might be. And look, first of all, obviously, if there is something real personal difficult going on, we wish him the best. But it feels like maybe Detective KJ was onto something a little bit. Like, maybe there's some frustration there with him. Maybe there's something about not being fully on the same page. I don't know. Like, we even had that conversation, I think it was last week, KJ, about are things as dialed in across the board as they need to be, right? Because your talent isn't there across the board, but are things still as dialed in as they should be, even without the talent? And it feels like this is a guy that is talented, but it feels like something is not dialed in all the way for this team with him.
Well, see, that's what throws me, right? Because he gets the benching to start the game against Miami, and then he gets in the game, he breaks that run, has the emotional outburst from the touchdown, and then pretty much has disappeared since. He had the same amount of rushing yards against the Jags that Drake May had. And so that gets me wondering, like, okay, remember how we were wondering, like, gosh, this foot injury seems to be kind of lingering. This is a couple of weeks now going in. I remember I said, like, if it's really serious, then why not put him on IR, give him 4 weeks to get it healthy, and then at least Drake May would be able to have a kind of a fresher running back coming in? Because, again, with everything that Drake May has to take in, you would want him to take it in with a solid running game, and you would figure, hey, we can go get this guy at number three because we've got a top-tier running back in the league. Top 10 running back for sure. You put Stevenson in that list
the last two years. Yeah, 100%. I mean, right. 2022, he was a top 10 running back. Coming off last year before injury.
Brand new contract, so you figure all the motive, the money was there, the money's there, the opportunity's there. You're really recognized as the only real weapon we have on offense, and you've kind of disappeared. Now, I remember, I forgot who had asked him, but he had kind of mentioned that he kind of missed Bill. Did you see that clip earlier in the season where it was like...
I vaguely remember that. Like, it was, I don't remember the exact comments, right, but it was, you kind of got the vibe that he didn't love the coaching change.
Well, I was more or less like he was straight up asked, does he miss Bill? And he was like, yes, he misses Bill. And so while that's not a wrong answer, but when you see what's happened later, was there a deeper seed that we didn't see planted and sowed going on early? Remember, I made this comment that my concern for this team is that some of the players will mistake Jerod Mayo's kind as a weakness. I think we're seeing some of that. Because remember, early on, Jerod Mayo offered them a space where they could kind of have like a game room and be able to be themselves and have open conversation. I wonder, you think it's a dusty PS5 in there, you think they could donate him to charity maybe at this point? Because I don't know if they're sitting down playing games together.
Yeah, I don't know if they're sitting down.
let's clear out that game room.
But you wonder, is Stevenson, and we've talked about really in relation to Jonathan Jones and David Andrews, like, and Juwan Bentley, like the guys that know what it's supposed to look like, and they see it not look that way now.
Yeah.
Now, Stevenson hasn't been here as long. He's never won a Super Bowl, but his rookie year, they made the playoffs. His second year, the offense had the Patricia Judge thing and was bad, but he was really good and had a great year.
Almost like a savior, right.
So I wonder if he looks at it now like, man, this isn't what it's supposed to look like, and I'm not the centerpiece or what. Like, maybe there's a little bit of a, hey, like, this doesn't really add up to me, you know, and we're 1-6. Like, I wonder if there's maybe a little bit of that going on there. But again, I mean, what, 4 months ago, they gave him a contract extension.
Yeah, which
so,
is
I mean,
crazy.
It had to have been on the same page then, or else he and them wouldn't have agreed to it. It's kind of weird how it's kind of come off that, it feels like.
Well, I think the other part of it is how the whole story for Stevenson developed. Remember, Damian Harris was just coming off of a 1,000-yard rushing season the year before. Ramondre Stevenson gets taken, gets benched for fumbling after one game, he gets inactive for 3 weeks. Comes back, gives you about 500-600 yards that season.
600 yards, exactly.
Right, yeah. And so now you're like, okay, if anything that's positive you could take away from here, and Harris's injury started to catch up with him where he just wasn't available, sometimes had flashes coming in as his number two, but you knew that Damian Harris wasn't going to be able to sustain being a number one back. Here's your opportunity. They want to make you the number one back. You offer some things that are going to be key. You like to have that big back when you have to play those cold weather games in Buffalo, or sometimes in those windy games in New York where you won't be able to get the passing game going. There are questions about the strength of the quarterback's arm, so you were definitely needed. Well, guess what? You're needed now more so than ever. I even thought that probably the Patriots, maybe in one of the later rounds, would scoop up another running back to try and develop him to be the number two. And when they didn't do that, I'm thinking there are all the incentives right there for Stevenson to say, hey, this is my chance to really show that I'm outperforming my contract. Because you would have to ask yourself right now, is he performing his contract, overperforming it, or underperforming it?
Under right now.
And there's a long way just to get to the at level, would you not say?
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. And I wonder, is there a frustration with him about how bad the offensive line has been? Because I think he knew going into the year it would be bad. But as we talked about a couple weeks ago before he got hurt, he had the fifth most yards after contact in the NFL. Like, he was getting hit at the line all the time. And if you wonder if he, and I'm not saying he does feel this way, but there are guys that would look at that and say, man, my O-line stinks and we're 1-6. Like, how much do I really want to put into this? Especially at that position. Like, the most, you could argue the most dangerous position in football, right? Running back, because they get hit so much with the shortest careers. Like, I mean, again, and I'm not accusing him of this, but, you know, now that it's personal reasons and he hasn't really played up to his usual level this year, I mean, is there maybe even subconsciously an element of that?
You think there might be something, the way that Van Pelt is designing things? Because remember, there a couple times, because remember, I forgot which game it was, just like, why did you go away from the run? What game was that?
I remember the Jets game. Remember they came out doing play action left and right all first half? Like, and I know Stevenson had the fumble in that game, but that fumble was in the third quarter, and it was only his sixth carry of the night in the third quarter. It's like, why are you waiting until the third quarter for his sixth carry?
So maybe what we talk about with the play calling and how people are feeling about Van Pelt, maybe there is that correlation between whatever may be going on with Stevenson or may not be going on. In terms, but if you tell me the guy's got 18 rushing yards this week, and then the previous week, even though he was out, Antonio Gibson and James Hasty combined had the same amount of rushing yards as Drake May, that is there a feeling like the running game with this coordinator just isn't as important, which I would think would be the antithesis because of what he had in Cleveland.
I agree.
They were run first. You had to be run first.
And you can't, I don't think. Like, if you take this job as the OC like Van Pelt did, you have to look at it and say, we're going to run the ball.
Yeah.
Like, that's your best player as a running back. You're going to have a rookie quarterback playing at some point. And it felt like during training camp, they were trying really hard to install run plays and to run the ball, and I just don't think they were good enough. And so then they got into a point where, remember, it was like, oh, the Van Pelt system, they're going to run outside zone, right, wide zone. Then they started running more just power and gap stuff, and then they went into play action more, and now they're running zone. So it's just, it feels like they haven't been able to consistently figure out what do we do well in the run game, and let's do it. And I think that's contributed to some of these inconsistencies and maybe to some frustration for some of these backs.
After week one, Mayo literally said on this station, we're going to run the ball. It's up to everybody else to try and stop us.
Yeah. And since then, they've gotten progressively worse.
Well, I mean, it's really not
existed. Outside of the Miami game, they were good. But other than that, they've gotten worse.
Well, let me ask you this, because, John, I know you like to watch what the offensive line is doing in games.
Yeah, he loves the big dogs.
Well, I think what's in the trenches is always the most important thing. If you have no O-line, you almost have no chance,
and
no
I
matter
know
how good you are.
Right, and we've talked, it's not a fun sports radio topic, but it is. I mean, we've seen this year.
It's not.
Like it or not, folks, it's important.
But I'll ask you this. How often have you seen the draw play called for Stevenson, knowing that defenses are going to be aggressive and try and really just bowl the A-gap if they can? How often do you see the draw play called? Now, I think it would probably be a little bit tougher to call it when Stevenson is back there in shotgun with May, but this is where the under-center work has to start coming to play, because if you're saying, okay, well, you got to trust May dropping back because he sees the field, right? That's the key. But if he's coming back, then that means you're at least a step back if you're the defense, and then catch him with the draw, because with all these yards after contact that he gets, there has to be some type of sleight of hand. We've even talked about, like, even in the screen game, right? Running the screen game through Stevenson. You're not seeing a lot of that taking advantage of the aggressiveness of the defense, where when Stevenson starts getting north-south, he becomes one of the hardest guys that I would probably say, man, maybe the third hardest guy to tackle going north-south in the league, maybe after Derrick Henry and Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, and I think they've also just been kind of predictable. Like, I thought Van Pelt had one of his better games against Jacksonville, but it was still something like 6 out of 7 possessions he ran on first down during one stretch. So it's like, you're not really keeping anyone off balance. And they haven't done a good enough job of helping out their bad offensive line. Like, they've run some 2 tight end stuff, but I think they probably should run a little more. Or they haven't had as many guys in protection at times as I think they should have. So I think, and again, part of that is Van Pelt's new at this and the players aren't that good overall. The talent's not there. But I just feel like they haven't always done a good enough job helping out an offensive line that's poor. And when you don't do that, then there's just fewer avenues to run the ball as well. And again, like I said before, it feels like they haven't been able to consistently decide what they want to pursue. Do they want to be more of a zone team? Do they want to be more of a gap team? And you should be able to do both in the NFL, but it feels like neither one of those right now is the Patriots' kind of bread and butter, that, hey, we can do both, but we're really good at this one. And I think until they figure that out, I don't know if we're going to see much better production from the run game. I mean, it's not like Jacksonville had a good defense and they still couldn't run the ball.
Yeah, it's KJ and Lyons on WEEI, 617-779-7937, text line 37937. Still to come, we'll talk about the Celtics and their opening night last night as well, plus the Red Sox, how they're watching the World Series as we get ready to watch it on Friday. Next, the Lion's Den on WEEI. Thanks for hanging out. KJ and Lyons, WEEI, thank you so much for spending your Wednesday with us, 617-779-7937. Text line 37937. We're minutes away from the Lions' Den. Have you been following this McDonald's E. coli story that's been going on out in the Midwest, guys?
So I've seen a little bit of it. I haven't followed it too closely, but I've seen a little bit of it.
So here's what's at play. So McDonald's believes that it traces back to a single delivery of, or a single batch, I'm sorry, of slivered onions that go on the quarter pounder. As a person who used to work at McDonald's, there is a difference between the onions that they put on the regular cheeseburgers, Big Macs, and so forth, and the onions that they put on the quarter pounder with cheese. I'm telling my old self, what used to be the McBLT when they used to have that, those would get the slivered onions as well. So those are two totally different onions. So McDonald's believes that it's being driven by the onions, and they're still checking to see if it's the beef, though they believe that everything does point back to the onions. 10 states have been affected, 26 in Colorado, 9 in Nebraska, 4 in Wisconsin, Iowa, Kansas, Missouri, Montana, Oregon. You guys going there anytime tomorrow?
Don't plan on it.
Can you just imagine the person's like, let's stop at McDonald's. We've been driving cross country, have no idea the story going on. Let's stop in Denver and grab some McDonald's real quick. You know, but you can't get the quarter pounder in these states. They've pulled them until they can kind of figure out what's been going on. But it's just been like one person has died, an older person. Some people have gotten so sick that it's just been almost kind of disgusting. Like, this is how bad it is. Stomach cramps, diarrhea, fever. Uh-oh.
So on my way home last night, I ended up leaving at like 1 a.m. after cutting through the Celtics in Bruins post-game audio, and obviously there's McDonald's right next door to us. And stopped there and grabbed a burger.
But you're not in one of those states.
Well, I mean, who knows? Could be anywhere now.
Maybe he'll be the first Massachusetts case.
That's true. I could be patient zero.
Is there really? I didn't even know there was one next door. Shows how aware I am.
Shows how often you don't, well, I don't want to say about parking on what side of the building. It's like, you don't even know what's on the other side of the building.
No, I only park on one side of the building.
Well, there you go. Talk about living. Well, I guess, well, not getting into like how parking works here at our station, but that's not important. But gosh, severe stomach cramps, diarrhea, nauseating or vomiting. It can be a few days after it or up to 9 days in some infections.
So 8 days from now, let's check on Zach.
There you go, bro. That's Halloween, isn't it? Cool. He'll be going, oh, I'll be like, that's a great monster sound. Oh.
What are you dressed up for? An E. coli victim.
We should not laugh because someone has died in this story. But look, some infections can cause severe bloody diarrhea and lead to life-threatening conditions such as hemolytic uremic, that even sounds like it's going to kill you. A type of kidney failure, like a uremic syndrome. I guess it probably just attacks your electrolytes inside your kidneys and just dries you out and you just collapse, wow, man.
That's nuts. Ugh.
But this is, I mean, there's just, McDonald's just so has to get ahead of this, because here's the, and somebody in one of the towns in Colorado is suing McDonald's, which I think kind of gets into a weird weeds, because franchisees are actually the owners of the location. These are really just leased out restaurants. Yeah. So,
isn't it like the mafia? They just kick up to a big McDonald's.
Wait, there's no such thing as the mafia. There's no such thing as the mafia at all. Now, there's this thing of ours that
Burger King kicks up to the king.
You're really pushing the envelope. Look, I'm trying to keep the seat. When it's a news story, you can mention the location. But when we're just having like a conversation about somewhere we went, and even Zach telling his story about going to the, John, you should probably turn the car around the building once just to see some of the beautiful things over there.
No, thank you.
That's a great, it's a perfect pace. It's right,
I'm sure,
where
it's great, but no.
It's where I got my car smashed right there at Beacon. Oh. You know where Beacon and
is that a historic landmark?
Well, no, where
KJ
I got my
got
car,
his car smashed.
No, but I tell you, it was coming from here, from coming on that other side, right? Like, there's like a 5-point side that also includes Beacon Street, and then another one that'll take you into Watertown, and another one to take you going into Nonantum if you go straight. Someone slammed right into me, so I'm about to pull up over near where the rowing boats are. You know what I'm talking about, guys? So I'm about to pull over here where the rowboats are, where people, you know, I'm like, figure he's going to come over and exchange his information. Psh, hooks that left. Heads back into off into Austin and Brighton. He disappears, you know, where it never be found. I couldn't gauge the country of the flag that was in his rear view mirror that was hanging. But that's all I remember. So Yeah. So that's why and that's right there by the McDonald's behind the building. Well, there you go. Well, this guy flew into me at that light where, like, you can't just jet into the middle of the intersection and have some car just smash into you coming from the Watertown side. This is a disaster. 37937. What do you have on the text line, Zach?
One texter thinks that this smells like a pre-trade, quote, injury for Ramondre. Commit to the tank and snag another day two pick.
I think that's what's going on.
I'm open to it.
I'm thinking if you're the Cowboys, do you get on the phone with the Patriots because they need a running game so bad?
Yeah.
And they're what, only a game out of the top spot in the NFC
East? Or even if you're the 49ers and you're worried about McCaffrey maybe not coming back, like Stevenson with Jordan Mason, like all of a sudden, hey, you got a pretty, you know, and now Ayuk is out.
But
like,
would the return haul be as great?
I don't know. But
not with the 40. Well,
I don't know. It would depend, I guess.
I think because Stevenson and that contract, I think the Cowboys, I mean, I don't want to trade the guy off, but if you're listed as foot, not injury, personal, it's almost kind of like, why even mention the foot? If you're the Cowboys, you're in such a desperate mode to get a running game going, and I'm keeping up what's going on with my buddies down at our sister station in Dallas. Now part of the conversation has been like, okay, yeah, maybe if Derrick Henry was here in Dallas, he wouldn't have the season that he's having now. So really they're having super buyer's remorse, and they're probably saying, who is a player that we feel would be inspired to play for this team, has some cachet in this league, and could probably help us moving forward? I think Ramondre Stevens, if I'm the Cowboys, I'm on the phone with the Patriots, probably in the feeling out phase right now. And maybe this is why it was like, okay, he's got to make the trip to London, because then it becomes the question of like, dude didn't even make it and is not on the IR. That's the big question. So he's got to go over there. Wasn't effective. What, seven carries? Seven carries?
18 yards, I think.
Yeah, seven carries, 18 yards. That's a way to just kind of, you know, let me just get the hamstrings loose and take a couple of hits, get out of here. Dallas is online too when we get back. So, yeah, it does smell like teen spirits going on, but not team spirit, but teen spirit. Like, yay, I'm going to be young again and go
to
Dallas.
It's a real strong running back class too. Yeah. So you add another day two pick and then pick up potentially a running back with a higher ceiling, and he's under control for 4 years.
Maybe you get a fourth and a sixth for Stevenson, maybe?
Yeah, and I think like there's a lot of teams that are pretty good teams that you could say, like even the Chiefs, like Pacheco's out for what, another 10 get, whatever it is? Like,
you're right.
There's
but they got Kareem Hunt. Kareem Hunt's now their number one back.
I think Stevenson's probably better at this stage than Kareem Hunt.
Well,
like,
but
he's younger, more athletic at this stage.
Well, the thing is, he also does have that contract. Kareem Hunt was just pulled off the street.
Right.
Then you've also got the guy who has his name backwards.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, so Paraj, whatever. I don't
whatever
want to
his
blow,
name is.
Whatever his name. Backwards. You put his name to a mirror, it's like ambulance, you know?
But I mean, some of the teams, like some of the, like obviously the Eagles have Barkley, they're all set, right? The Falcons have Bijan Robinson. But I think there's several of these contending, or at least contending-ish teams, that would benefit from having a running back like Stevenson.
Yeah, I guess the other part
Buffalo
of it, though.
Bills.
Yeah, well, because Cook is hurt, right? Yeah. But again, like you have to think of who doesn't have someone signed long-term beyond this year, who's not a rental, that you can go ahead and say Stevenson contract is low enough that we'll absorb it, and he can be the guy here next year, and we can go get another free agent behind him where, you know, we control both costs. So that's the thing.
I think you're right. I think Dallas would be the best.
Yeah.
In that situation, like they would be, and like they let Tony Pollard go.
Plus he's an Oklahoma guy too, played at Oklahoma. So I think that's probably like, maybe you just feel like you can get a whole new lease on life, and then you feel like all your friends, then you find out all your friends from college are bugging you. You're like, damn, at least I have my privacy in New England. Be careful what you wish for. All right, it is now time for... Yeah!
See the one about lions?
Can't lose to this
adapter. He's so competitive. All right, John, we've been talking about the Patriots, and we really haven't discussed the Jets because there's so much mess with this team. There's a mess with the Jets as well. Will the Patriots bounce back and roar this weekend versus the Jets, or will it be a really soft, purring meow?
I think the Patriots meow, and I think the Jets win. I hate to say it, but I think the Jets win.
Yeah, it's... The only way I could see it is there would have to be like the Drake May miracle game where the Jets are just so disconnected. Look, they've got a lot of injuries. They're nicked up pretty bad on the defensive side of the ball. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams are going to figure it out. Breece Hall didn't get the running game going. He was just effective in the passing game. If Aaron Rodgers is committed to just trying to throw the ball all the time and not get to the run game, that may be helpful to the Patriots just because Rodgers has now shown himself clearly to make mistakes. But I'm with you. It's a little pussycat. Meow. All right, we'll be talking more Celtics here in a couple of minutes. Jason Tatum's jump shot looks fixed. Will he continue to roar from three-point range this season?
Yes. And he's not going to go 8 for 11 every night like he did the other night, but yes, I bet you he's going to shoot 39 or 40% this year from three.
Oh, yeah. You hear that? You hear that roar? Give me another roar because Tatum just hit another three. See, I think his three-point shooting eventually is going to set up the inside game for him when he wants to go to it. It'll be interesting how teams defend it if he does depend on that three. Do they bring out a stretch four or five to be in his face if they know he's committed to the three? But then what do you do right there? You drive to the hole because there's no rim protection. So it'll be interesting to see how the cat and mouse game plays out as Tatum continues to drain those threes. All right, we'll get to the World Series here Friday night.
Yes, I think they will. I think Jack Flaherty's going to have a big game one for them, and they're going to win and go up 1-0.
Yeah, I want the Dodgers in this, and I loved seeing the Yankees start slow. I think this series will have a lot of high dramatics. The only thing that has me disappointing is we're literally waiting almost a full week between the last games of baseball.
I hate that. Remember that happened with the NBA Finals, too? Like, we had to wait a whole week?
Well, that's because the Lakers sucked, and they got swept in that series, right?
No, but still, like, we had to wait a week. But, like, both series were done, and we were just sitting here waiting for, like, 7 or 8 days
I think baseball is showing you the effects of what's happening when the NFL gets hold of the schedule. Like, they are literally, like, they're dancing around Thursday Night Football, and they could be playing tonight. All right.
Oh, yeah.
KJ and Lions continues next here on WEEI. Good Wednesday to you.